Hello, and welcome to Be Indie Now, a podcast about independent game development. I'm your host, Tobias Marks, and with me today is Dave Markowitz of LCD Dreams. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Good to be here.
So tell me about LCD Dreams.
LCD Dreams is a startup indie game development studio that a friend of mine and I started about 2.5 years ago. Actually, it was initially my company, but I brought him on because I realized that I'm not very good at business development and marketing.
Yeah, it's hard to do a company by yourself. How long were you working by yourself until you brought him in?
Well, I've done my own consulting and business, my own company stuff for a long time, but so I'm kind of used to that. But this was the first time I really wanted to get into making a public game. So I think I was working on design for maybe a couple months and then, for a game and then brought him on, soon after that.
Cool.
So it was really only a couple months or so.
So how did you meet your partner?
We met at a game, competition, tournament. We each worked for different, free-to-play game companies. And there was a tournament down in Los Angeles that had both, you know, a game from each of our companies. And I was the game master, associate producer for that game, and he was I think the marketing director for their company. And we just met there, and we maintained a relationship after that. You know, mostly business. We didn't really become friends until later. But our companies were kind of competing companies, so we often stayed in touch just to talk about our products and whatnot. So, and then after we each left, we started to just go out to lunch every once in a while and became friends.
So we each left your individual companies?
Right.
So you're doing it full-time, or are you guys doing it on the side and doing other projects? Other jobs.
It's on the side. Neither of us can afford to be doing it full time. So frankly, I mean the game that we're doing right now is being produced or developed by another studio that we partnered with. So our work is most of the work is out of our hands at this point. I did the design for it, so and you know all the design is more or less done. And now I'm mostly working on community management interactions, and he's doing, you know, more of the business development and some marketing consultation type stuff.
Interesting. So you've kind of passed the torch of development to this other company you're partnering with.
Yeah, because I'm not a full-fledged developer myself. I'm kind of a jack of all trades. I do a lot of different things.
All indies should be.
Yeah. But I'm not really an expert at any of them. So I didn't want to rely on just myself to make the game because I figured that would end up taking forever. And my partner is not a developer at all. And we just couldn't really afford to pay someone full time. And this studio agreed to partner up, not just to provide the development, but they are contributing a third of the development cost in exchange for a third of the revenue. So it's an actual partnership rather than just, hiring contracting workers.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way to do it. So, like, how did you meet this other studio?
Actually, on the Unity website, I was posting on the forums asking for help with this game. It was actually in response to, so this game is our second game actually that we started working on. The first one, was a much bigger game and we had a different developer and we ran into problems with him. So then I was posting on the forums to try to get someone to possibly help us out, as a replacement. And then at the same time, I was also coming up with this other idea for a smaller game. And then, so we ended up deciding to work on that instead. But anyway, he just responded through the forum.
So how big is this other studio? Is it a one-man show, or does he have a team?
So he's an internet-based studio. So he's like the director of the company. And he essentially runs it out of his house. But he has people all around the world.
Yeah, remote office stuff. It makes a lot of sense now because there's people everywhere who want to work together.
Right. And it's cheaper. I mean, you have no overhead or very little overhead, and you can get developers who are willing to spend, you know, part of their time and maybe for less money than a full-time developer.
Yeah, absolutely. So you guys made a deal and you're doing the whole like paying thing, or is it mostly equity based? You said it's 1/3, but like, are you actually putting in some funding to this game?
Yeah. I have contributed, and we worked out a kind of a schedule of payments. So, you know, I would pay him, I think I paid him some up front, and then after a few months and then another few months, just to help fuel his programmers and artists. But at the same time, he was also contributing his own money as well.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, that's great that you guys are working together like that. You're able to, are you getting that funding just from out of pocket, or are you trying to find any other sources to help fund it?
Yeah, it's mostly out of pocket. Mostly my money, but then I did have one other friend who contributed some as well.
Did you give him like a percentage stake in it, or do you just like, you know, a no interest loan kind of thing, or low interest?
No. We agreed that I would give her a percentage of our stock once we actually vest and actually have stock.
That's cool. You
know, right now we are incorporated, but we haven't set up stock yet.
Interesting. Why did you set up a corporation versus an LLC or even a partnership?
You know, that's really a better question for my partner, Chris. As I said, I'm not the best business development part team, but I think my understanding was that we had legal consultation, and it was just the safer route. And
no, it definitely makes sense, and it's definitely good to actually like talk to someone who knows something about legal matters when you're doing it. You know, you can't you know, ignore those contracts, whatever. Right? I mean, it's hard to, you know, nail into indies, like get stuff on paper. So it's good to do everything completely on board with actually filing the corporate paperwork and board. I guess you have to like report to the board every year. I actually haven't ran a corporation. I've only had partnerships and LLCs myself, so I don't remember the differences off the top of my head.
So, yeah, we don't actually have a board. It's just the two of us. So yeah, I mean, we don't have to worry about that, but we do have to worry about taxes.
Yeah.
And there's, it's not just like income tax, it's also, there's sales taxes and, you know, business license.
Well, you also have, it's all write-offs at this point too, in your first few years, cause you haven't been making money with your games yet.
Right. Yeah.
Makes sense. So now that you're working on this, you're still doing it part-time. You're doing community stuff, you said, right?
Yeah, interacting with fans. We've been running contests for the last...
Where are you running them on? Like, you have your own website, or you go to other forums like Reddit?
We do have our own website, but we we run them on Facebook, on our Facebook page. Mm-hmm. But we post about them everywhere. You know, whenever we have a contest, we post about it on Reddit, on Facebook, on Twitter, on our website, on Touch Arcade. Actually, when we started, we were posting it even more places to other websites, but we found that a lot of the smaller game forums don't really appreciate those.
Yeah, they don't like people invading their community just for promotion, right? If you're an active member in that community, it's more okay than like, you know, you've made 5 posts and 4 of them were promoting your stuff.
Right. Touch Arcade seems to be the exception. They seem very open and very excited about promotions, contests, and such.
Interesting, because I was told that for Touch Arcade, like, they really get noticed by the Touch Arcade staff, you kind of have to be an active member of the community.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, I'm just talking about the fans.
The people on the Touch Arcade forums.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The staff actually... I've been an active member on Touch Arcade for years. I have two accounts there, one my personal account and then one for the company. And even the company one has been active for about a year and a half, I think.
Mm-hmm.
No, actually, I think two and a half, I think since we started the company. And we still haven't gotten noticed by the staff. It's very difficult to get picked up by the Touch Arcade staff.
Yeah, I've been to a couple talks of theirs, and they say that pretty much you have to already be popular to be noticed, since they have so many people that often they find the games they should talk about next because they can't help but talk about it because it's gotten so many ratings, everyone else is talking about it, or their fans, their community is like, hey, you should review this game now, and a bunch of people request that. So... You know, it's not like that's this whole notion of I'm not discovered and then the Touch Arcade people will select me and then I'll become popular is just a falsity of how it actually works.
Yeah, they do review some games that are not big yet.
They'll review smaller guys, but they have to already have like that momentum and that community and that reason for them that you are pushing on them where they can't help but review you because their community wants them to.
Right.
Rather than their community is completely unaware of you.
Right.
So that sounds like a very intense, you know, full-time job, be able to do that promotions. How much success have you had with it?
We've had some success. We certainly were able to increase our following using it over the past 9 months or so, 6 to 9 months. I think when we first started the Facebook page, we were able to, you know, invite our friends and family, and I think we got about 50, 75 people from that. And then since then, we've increased it by another 500.
That's pretty good.
Through the contest. Yeah. So it worked out pretty well, and it wasn't too expensive. I mean, I think we're... Usually, the giveaways were about $10, and we would run them maybe either once a week or every other week.
Oh, wow, once a week's pretty often. Definitely, I can see how that would grow.
Yeah,
that's really quick.
That's what we were doing that earlier on, and then over time we started to spread them out a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't spending quite so much.
So, like already, I've like totally neglected to talk about the game. So why don't you give us like the high end pitch of it right here?
Right. So the game is called Evil Master Overlord, and I think of it as a cross between Dungeon Keeper from the 90s and Tetris. The idea was that I was seeing a lot of pairings or mashups of games, like Match 3 games with RPG elements, and they were really popular. I think one of them was like... a puzzle dungeon. I don't know. I can't remember. But in any case, they were becoming really popular, especially with the more mid-core, hardcore group, rather than the casual players, because of course the RPG elements. But to me, it was still just a match three game, and I wanted something that was more hardcore. That had it was a real strategy game, not just a puzzle game. So I came up with this design, and I've played a lot of tower defense games and castle defense games and, a lot of the Facebook games where you're setting up, you know, like Clash of Clans, where you're setting up a city or a town, whatever, and defending it against invaders.
Mm-hmm.
So I took a lot of inspiration from that and, of course, from Dungeon Keeper. But I have this idea of... having your dungeon be set up while you're being invaded in real time, but with more randomness than you get in those other games. So something like how Tetris works, where you have a queue of items that you put into your dungeon, and it's a randomized queue. But you do get some control over it because you get to choose which items will go into that queue.
So, you know, I might have... 8 different types of walls I can use, and I will pick, you know, 3 or 5 of them that will appear randomly.
Right. In addition to the walls, there are minions, traps, barriers. So all of those things go into the queue. And then you also have spells. Those are separate from the queue, but you can pick those as well.
Can you adjust the percentage? Like, if I pick this power up twice, it'll appear twice as often?
No, you can't pick anything twice. The only way that you could increase the percentage of something of things appearing is by just using fewer in your arsenal. So, you know, the fewer items you use, the more frequently they'll appear. But you can't change the percentage of any one particular item.
Interesting. Yeah, no, it's definitely a cool idea where it's two existing game mechanics, but you haven't seen them put together before. And so that's a really great way to create a unique and compelling game experience.
Right, right. Like, I figured both games on their own are really popular or fan favorites. So I thought maybe putting them together might work out pretty well.
So, you know, I've seen there's some other randomness type games with tower defense where, you know, you have random abilities appearing while you go out to attack it, but they're usually like, oh, I have, you know, this missile versus that missile to use. Slightly different than, you know, having to build this wall or that tower. What happens when you run into situations where it's like, man, I really need a wall right now and I'm just getting my other power up, and you know, you're kind of relying on finding that one perfect piece. How do you solve for that problem?
yeah, you got to be able to adapt, because that very well could happen, that you're getting all traps and minions and you're not getting many walls. But that's the name of the game. The whole point is to figure out in your arsenal what you want to be able to use, and learn how to use those. If you go in and put in a mix of everything, then you're going to have to understand that you may not get what you want all the time. Whereas if you load up more on walls and less on the other items, then you're more likely to get the walls. And you have to be good at building a maze very quickly. So yeah, it's hard to you can't really do much inside the game once you're already in the game to fix an issue like that as a player. So it's more about choosing which items are going to go into your arsenal before you start playing, and then once you get in, just learning how to adapt quickly. But there are spells. Spells are kind of the catch-all. You know, they're good for getting you out of a tight situation.
Are spells going to cost like some type of in-game currency or something like that?
Not directly. So you'll be able to pick them up as drops. Most often, when you kill the heroes that are invading your dungeon, they will drop what we're calling Hero Pulp, which is this currency that you can use to upgrade your minions and your traps and your overlord.
Permanently upgrade, right?
Right, right. Yeah, and you don't upgrade them while you're building the dungeon. You do that after in the menu system. But occasionally they'll drop other things like spells. So you'll be able to pick those up, and you won't be able to use them.
Are spells in a game. One use, or once you have it, yeah. You have it?
Yeah, they're one level use. So if you assign it as a spell for in your arsenal, then you get to use it throughout that entire level while you're playing that one instance of the level.
Right, and so then when I replay it, I don't have that spell anymore. But when I was in that level, I could use it as often as I'd like or as often as the spell would let me.
Right. Well, there will be a timer for each one, much like...
Yeah, assuming a more powerful spell, you know, might be like once a minute versus a weak spell I could do every few seconds.
Right, right. So there, and then the other way to get spells will be through our magic hat feature, which is basically like a roulette wheel. You'll be able to spin it and get random stuff from it. And each spin will cost one gold coin, which is the premium currency. So you will have to pay for that, but we'll also be giving out free coins throughout the game. So you will have the opportunity to get them for free.
So gold coins are not exclusive towards hard currency, but they're much, much more rare than hero pulp.
The gold coins won't actually drop in the game, but we'll give them out for free. You know, it's really common these days in mobile games to have motivational bonuses for logging in. Mm-hmm. When you open up the game, each day you'll get some kind of bonus, and we'll likely have a system like that. So, you know, you might earn the first 4 days or something, you'll earn some extra pulp, but on the fifth day you'll earn a gold coin or something like that.
Will I also be able to buy hero pulp with gold coins?
Yeah, you will be able to do that.
Cool. Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
So how long have you been working on this game?
I started the design almost 2 years ago, and we started development about a year and a half ago.
Yeah, a long time to work on it. What's changed about the game in that time?
How
will be hard to summarize, right? Like, let's be more specific. How has the game changed in the last year?
Ironically, not very much. The last year has been pretty slow for us. One of the problems with using an internet-based studio is you don't have as strong of a connection with your team. So the studio's developers, and mainly the programmers and some of the artists as well, have dropped out here and there. They'll just either stop responding or they'll find other projects to work on, and they're just no longer, they end up not being employed anymore by the studio. So then when that happens, he has to go and find replacements. And that takes time for him to find the replacement, and then time for him to ramp the person up on the project, which of course causes delays.
Is that costing you like money with the funding too, or is it more milestone based where it hasn't been as big of a funding hurdle? Has it been a time hurdle?
So it costs us money in overhead, because we're having to continue to pay our taxes and stuff like that. As far as the development costs, this is where the studio has been really great. We've already contributed our costs, and he is basically sucking up the losses from these developers. What he does is he'll go and get other projects to help refund the new developers. So he's been awesome that way.
Yeah, it's that classic adage, right, where it's good, cheap, time, pick two.
Right. Yep, exactly.
So you're getting your good and you're getting it cheap, but it's not costing you time.
Yeah, yep, exactly. And I think that's pretty common for indie developers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's common with all developers, right? It's always that matter of that choice. There's amazing games made in a short amount of time because they put $1 million into it, and there's amazing games made for relatively cheap, but it took 6 years.
Right. Yeah. I just meant that particular choice, mm-hmm. Sacrificing time and getting cheap and good quality, I think is common for indie developers in particular.
Yeah, definitely, because usually their funding is self-funded, so it's right. Not a lot if people are able to, you know, put up $10,000, be able to hire a bunch of freelancers to get it done this month.
Right, and the exception might be the developer who doesn't really care that much about quality and instead just wants to get a game out really quickly.
Yeah, exactly. You can always go cheap quality and get something done, right? I mean, it only takes a weekend to make a game. It's a question if they're making a good game.
Right, exactly.
So the game's been more stagnant for the last year, but what about before that? How much has it changed since development started? Or has it been pretty locked in?
It's been pretty close to what we started with. There have been a few changes here and there, particularly with the shop, the premium shop, and you know, figuring out how to do upgrades and the in-app purchases and things like that. But overall, the game mechanics and all have stayed pretty close to how I initially envisioned them. I mean, of course, that was 2 years ago, so I don't exactly remember what my original vision was.
Yeah, it's all iterative process.
Yeah, but it's but yeah, it hasn't changed too much.
Did you do any prototyping? You know, like a small game maker prototype or something like that?
No, we didn't. And you know, it probably would have been a good idea, at least. Well, so the main problem that we've had has been the AI, because it's a sandbox game, so the whole dungeon is wide open. You know, there's a few decorative items in there, but generally, you can put your objects anywhere you want, and that creates problems for the pathing of the heroes and the minions and the overlord, because you need they could go anywhere, so you need to have this adaptable pathing system. And that's been our buggiest issue. And I just lost my train of thought. Where was I going?
Are you talking about like what problems you've been facing in the development for not prototyping?
Oh, right. So it would have been good to have a prototype to test that out. But at the same time, that's probably one of the most difficult things to program. And it might have taken too long to make a prototype just to test that out. So I'm not really sure that in theory, it would have been nice to have a prototype, but in practice, I'm not sure that it would have been practical or economically viable.
So I don't know. Why don't you just like take a weekend and make something like super, super rough just to, you know, test out a core of the mechanic, right? The whole Tetris pieces of what kind of maybe shapes of the walls work nicely if you don't have all the traps implemented.
Right. Well, I mean, we have a running game at this point, but you're talking about why didn't we do that at the beginning?
Actually, no. Why not like right now, right? Because I played your game yesterday, and so, you know, it's not finished yet. You have these AI issues, and you have, you know, this amount of work to polish it up. Have you thought about, you know, all right, we want to add these mechanics, these traps, but we haven't played it to know if those are fun or if these were not necessary. So of the works remains, which should we focus in if we had to reduce our scope? And you could take a weekend, prototype something in Game Maker, see if it works.
Oh, okay. I see what you mean. I mean, we've got all of the items in there, and they're all more or less working. Yeah, we have started thinking about if we wanted to try to finish this up and not let it drag on, are there things that we could potentially remove? And if we remove them, how would that affect gameplay? So far, it's still kind of something that's on the back burner because I think we're trying to figure out these AI issues, and the AI issues aren't really related to like what items per se you're allowed to use. There's only so many things we could take out without completely changing the gameplay. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we could take out like the barriers or something.
Have you thought about changing the gameplay? Right. I mean, if you is reducing the scope still an option, or are you like, no, this is the vision. This is the way it's got to be.
Well, the problem with that is that could end up requiring a lot of code changes, and we don't like a lot more than just the bug fixes. Mm-hmm. And we just don't have the funding to do that kind of redevelopment. But you know, we certainly talked about other options. There was when Nimblebit came out with their line, that game, I'm blanking on the name of it, where you collect other warriors as you're running along throughout the level, and you're shooting or fighting monsters, and you have four different directions you can go.
Oh man, I know exactly the one you're talking about, and I'm blanking on the name too. I love the art style for it. I've played that game, and I don't remember the name.
Right. So when that came out, I had another idea of how to use Evil Master Overlord with that Nimble Quest. That was what it was called.
Right. So that's why we forgot. It was too simple.
Yeah. So that gave me an idea of possibly adapting Evil Master Overlord so that instead of controlling the dungeon, maybe you control the heroes trying to make your way through the dungeon to get to the treasure. And maybe you'd maybe there would be different heroes scattered throughout, and you'd go and pick them up and fight the minions on the way. So something kind of like that, you know, because when that game came out, it was huge. It was really popular. So we had talked about that, but I mean, that would have required a major change to the coding.
Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing's stopping you from making a whole series of Dungeon-y type games and reusing assets or even adding different modes to the same game if you wanted to expand upon it later.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. But we got to get one game out first so that we can actually get some traction and hopefully get some funding back.
Yeah. When are you guys planning to release, or what kind of time frame you're thinking?
We are definitely shooting for the first half of this year. So, you know, preferably in the next few months, but, you know, that really depends on how this studio goes, you know, with their developers. If they can hang on to them, then yeah, that's, I think that will happen. But if we have another year like we had last year, then it's all up in the air.
Yeah, I mean, you can't predict.
Right, but, you know, the fact is my partner can't really afford to continue doing this forever. So there's a couple of options we have. One is to run a Kickstarter or Indiegogo or something like that.
Yes, find outside funding in some way.
Exactly, yeah. And we are very strongly considering that. In fact, we're basically planning it. If not to finish the current version, then at least to provide funding for porting to other platforms and for expanding on the game, like adding multiplayer and other features. So there's that. And then we've also talked about the possibility of, you know, selling off the IP and the game to another publisher, developer. So there's other options, but, you know, mostly just ideas floating around in our heads right now.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just like once you get something out there, because you already are building up an audience, you're already building up a fan base before your game is even playable. You know, once you start getting into people's hands, it's going to be so much easier to grow that audience and that fan base and grow that community around your game. And with a community, you can do so much stuff. You can direct them to funding. You can direct them to, you know, features. You just direct them to be part of your game and spread it around. So you just have to get the game into that playable enough state, and it's going to solve a lot of your problems.
Right. And it's really close. You know, it's just a handful of bugs that we got to fix. And then we'll have more or less a beta that we can give out to testers. We already have people who want to do the beta testing. So we'll be able to give that out to them, and then hopefully they can help promote the game as well.
Cool. And analyze it. So who's your target audience for this game? Is it hardcore gamers, more casual gamers, people in between?
Definitely teens and 20s. And maybe even some 30s too, you know, like people who grew up with Dungeon Master in the 90s. Basically mid-core, so people who are often, they want to be hardcore players, or they used to be hardcore players and maybe don't have as much time right now, or they love mobile games, but they tend to play more mobile games than console or desktop, but they still consider themselves a hardcore player, and so tend to play more of the hardcore games on mobile than the puzzle games. That's essentially the type of audience that we're going after.
Cool. So what about that audience do you try to go after in particular, as opposed to hardcore or super casual? Like, what do you do to appeal to the mid-core?
So super casual, I don't think would be a good fit, just because there are more complex elements in the game, strategy and RPG elements that that casual players just aren't that interested in. As far as the hardcore players, it could very well be a hardcore fan game, but it's a little bit lighter on those strategy elements and RPG elements than a real hardcore RPG game or a strategy game would be. It's good for maybe the hardcore player who likes to play mobile games every once in a while. But the reason that we're going after the mid-core audience is they are the ones who play more mobile games generally and also spend money on them. You know, casual players often don't spend that much money. It's mainly the hardcore players that spend the money. So the mid-core is a good crossover, a hybrid between them. Hopefully the game will appeal to hardcore players as well. It kind of remains to be seen. I think it'll be it could go here or there with hardcore players. Some will love it, and others will think it maybe is a little too simple or not engaging enough, not enough strategy. Because each level only lasts probably five minutes, maybe 5 to 10 minutes.
Oh, five to ten is a fairly long time, too.
Yeah. I mean, it could be over even quicker than that. But you can, if you're good enough, you can make it last longer.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I guess it's not like a very long time, right? But in the casual space, in the mobile space, that's a long time.
Right. So gameplay is fairly short. There's not as much like customization as there are on full scale RPGs. For your overlord, you get to choose between male and female. You get to choose your armor and your weapon, and that's basically it for your overlord. Then of course you get to choose your arsenal items, but the overlord has generally less customization than full-scale hardcore RPGs.
You want it to flow better, right? You want people to be able to kind of pick up and play, maybe select a couple abilities and still be able to get through the level. And
right.
Some people will spend a little bit more time and find the best ability, but you're not meaning them to, obsess about this trap versus that, being 0.02 more damage.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and we're not even going to be displaying that such detailed information about everything. There will be information about which, what traps and weapons and such, how much damage they do, but it won't be, so pinpoint precise down to like, hundredth of a percent or whatever.
Yeah, you want to make it hard to calculate that DPS, damage per second stuff.
Right, yeah. It's not about going out and seeing how quickly you can kill heroes with your blazing sword of dragon fire or whatever. It's more about how quickly you can lay down a dungeon, a labyrinth, and fool those heroes into falling into your traps.
Very cool. So imagine I have a time machine. I give you access to it. I set the dial to 2.5 years ago. You go back, you appear in front of yourself, and you have 30 seconds. What do you say?
I would tell myself to stop working on Banished, which was the first game. We haven't even talked about that. That was the first game I was designing. I would tell myself to put that on hold and work on a much smaller game, like Emo, maybe even smaller than that, and just try to get that out the door as quickly as possible, with being very high quality.
Yeah, small prototype, but then iterate on it, as opposed to starting the big long project that you're going to work on forever.
Right.
Yeah, right. Definitely.
I mean, good the advice. Thing is, I thought I had a good idea back then that I was going to not try to make the whole game. I was just going to try to make a demo and then try to sell that to VCs or angels or someone to get some funding. And 2.5 years ago, that made more sense. Unfortunately, the market has changed since then. Back then, Facebook RPGs were starting to become popular, potentially. I was seeing, Supercell, which has created Clash of Clans.
Yeah, I mean, even 2.5 years ago, it was almost waning, the Facebook game popularity, compared to the heyday it was when Zynga ruled all.
Right. Well, yeah, the casual games were starting to drop out, but there were a lot of mid-core games that are starting to appear. The predecessor to Clash of Clans was Backyard Monsters, mm-hmm. By KIXEYE, and that was huge, especially once they converted all their art style to a more hardcore style. But so that was really big, and that spurred on Clash of Clans, which became even bigger. But before Clash of Clans, Supercell had another game, and I'm blanking on the name of it, but it was actually very similar to what I was designing. It was basically a real-time / turn-based multiplayer RPG. And I think, I still think it could actually do really well, but it won't be what I originally imagined it to be, which was a Facebook RPG, multiplayer RPG game. At this point, it would probably be a mobile game and not Facebook. But regardless, so I had this idea of creating the demo and trying to get funding for it. And at the time, it was potentially viable, but I think now, it would obviously, for a Facebook game, that would be very difficult. Most fundraising or most venture capitalists probably would not want to.
Yeah, it's a volatile industry. It's hard to maintain. It's very much involved large sums of money being passed for user acquisition. So it's really hard for indies to penetrate that space.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this was going to be a game. It would have been over $1 million to develop the game. And that's not even, that's barely touching on user acquisition.
Yeah, no, it's just well beyond what venture capitalists are willing to give to an unproven firm. I mean, you're lucky to get anything from venture capitalists if you're unproven.
Well, actually, it's below what venture capitalists normally fund. They tend to, $5 million is more of a minimum that they tend to fund. But yes, for unproven, then,
well,
yeah,
there are smaller funding firms. Like, there's Indie Fund out there, right? And they'll give smaller amount, relatively, right? Like, it'd be, $100,000 or something. I'm not sure exactly how big all their deals are.
Yeah, I mean, there's angels, and there's other solutions besides VCs. And they would, using them, we could have raised $1 million. But even if that required having a completed demo, and we only got about halfway there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, having a nice, solid prototype that's proven well, or something to iterate on the store and say, hey, people like this, I have a growing community, I can expand upon these mechanics, I can expand upon this world, much easier sell. And often you can sell directly to the consumers, right? That's where crowdfunding comes in as such a really good way to fund, because the people who want to see the game the most are those existing fans. And a good number of them would be willing to spend money to make it happen.
Right, right. Yeah, that's what we're hoping.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward for the game coming out. And I think once you get those players in hand, you're going to have a lot of all these issues of is this going to be fun? Is this going to work? How are we going to continue? You're going to have your answers there. You're going to have those people actually playing it, giving you feedback, iterating on it. And hopefully that'll lead to just a much faster cycle of inspiration. Even those other developers, they'll have people to count on, right? Like right now it's in that void state where if you don't work on it, or if you can't work on it for a year, you're only disappointing two people, right? But if now it's like, oh, I didn't get this update out, now I'm disappointing 500 people or 1,000 people or 10,000 people. And it starts being a bigger motivational factor to do more as that can grow.
Right, right, of course.
Yeah, and I definitely like that you're spending the time to promote it pre-game too. A lot of developers don't do that, so I hope that that strategy helps get you a bunch of previews and reviews and a much bigger launch.
Yeah, yeah, I hope so too. I mean, we have people who are interested in the game. In fact, we had one comment on Touch Arcade after the last post that I made that we are now in the list of infamous companies or infamous games that are being awaiting release indefinitely.
Oh yeah, that's, I don't know if that's a good list to be on.
No, that's why I said infamous.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know, even infamous is usually like, oh, it's infamous, that game's still good, people remember it, but like the games of that have been in development for a while, maybe not that list.
Well, I mean, it's good in the sense that it means people are still interested in the game and waiting for it.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's always good that people care about the game. That's definitely right. A good bottom line to look at it.
Yep.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show and talking about your game and your company. I always like to end the show with talking about what games we've been playing lately. My story this week is going to be a bit more boring because I've been taking the train into work. So, of course, I've been pulling out my 3DS and playing Pokemon. I could be playing other games. I have Bravely Default now. I still need to play it. But Pokemon, it just takes up my time. And then to add insult to injury, when I get home, I've been going back into Minecraft because I have a server with some friends. And it's like, I hadn't logged in for a while, and I'm going in and setting it up. And I started setting up other instances of other worlds so we can start exploring a new world again, because we had built this giant empty city now since not my friends play on the server anymore. So, you know, as I said, it's kind of, oh, yeah, Pokemon Minecraft. You've heard me say that before on the show. What kind of games have you been playing lately?
Oh, gosh, I have so many. I'm kind of known by friends and family for having a ton of games on my mobile devices. I have an iPhone and iPad, and I've probably got 100 games on my iPhone and half that on my iPad. I don't, of course, play them all, but the ones I think that I've been playing more so than others are Baldur's Gate. I was a huge fan of Baldur's Gate in the 90s, and I was very excited to hear it coming out for iOS.
Yeah, it's definitely cool to bring back that IP. I was also a big fan of it back in the day. I haven't played the iOS version yet, but I've heard good things.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, there's an issue with moving, movement. Sometimes you'll tap on something to maybe just move the screen, and you'll end up moving your characters as well. But otherwise, it's great. I mean, it's better than the original because they adapted the Baldur's Gate 2 engine to the Baldur's Gate 1 content. That's awesome. Another one is that I never did play before was Knights of the Old Republic. So I've been playing that as well. Also a great game. It's different, of course, but it's still based on the D&D rule set and more or less the same engine.
Yeah, still massive RPGs. So there's actually a lot of similarities, even though they're very different.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny, actually. I'll see like weapon names or some rules, like skills or whatever, that I can tell were drawn directly from the D&D rule set. They don't even necessarily match.
Isn't KOTOR based on the Star Wars pen and paper, which is based on D20, which is based on Dungeons & Dragons?
Right, yeah.
So there's a long chain down that line,
right? But you can still see how a lot of things have carried through that.
Mm-hmm.
So more the basic stuff. That and then a staple for me has been Ascension, the card game.
Yeah, I love that card game.
Yeah, ever since that came out on iOS, I had never even heard of it before. I discovered it there and have loved it ever since I bought
I'm a big board gamer with the physical cards, but I have to admit I have the digital version of that one, and I have no desire to buy the physical one because it's just so much nicer to not have to deal with shuffling and everything.
Yeah, I agree, but there's also something to be said for having the physical cards in your hands and actually being able to play with people.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I got like the Dominion big box and everything, right? Yeah. But I guess I just didn't want to spend like $180 or whatever to buy Ascension, all its expansion packs, when I could spend like $20 and get it all digitally.
Of course, yeah. And I haven't bought all the expansions. I think I've bought just the bigger sets.
I don't think they have them all digitally yet, or maybe I'm not sure.
They don't have the latest. Yeah. They're the last two that came out in the last like 6 months or so aren't digitized yet.
Mm-hmm. That game is funny though, because it's a good port, like it functions, but you can tell that the person who made it was like more of a developer than like a UI designer, because there's some like rough UI yeah. things in that game. Like yeah. the card like borders are like, oh, this becomes red. It's just like solid, yep. bright, you know, red, pure, you know, pure color, 255 red. And it's like, ah, oh, you could have picked like a more pleasant shaved or rounded edges. Or you could have like, what does this color mean? Like, kind of had to guess and assume.
Yeah.
It's like, once you exactly. know it, like, oh, okay, I guess that's what this symbol means, but it's not taught very well. And it's
right.
It's made by a developer. It's kind of programmer art, programmer logic to it. It looks okay because it's using all the art from the game.
Right.
But if it's totally just copy pasted art from the game is what makes the game not look, you know, completely blocky boxes.
Right. And yeah, you can tell that it's definitely designed more for people who know the game than for people who don't.
Yeah, which is unfortunate, because it should turn on people to yeah. haven't played the game before.
Yeah, well, it did me.
Yeah, I suppose it does. But you know, compared to like the Carcassonne app, it's one right. of my favorite apps, period.
So well done.
So well done. It's amazing how beautiful that game is.
Yep.
I mean, like, I'm a big fan of Carcassonne the game, too. But like, as far as app design, it's the best conversion from a board game to a digital game I've seen.
Even beyond that, I think it's one of the best produced games, period. I mean, I have yet to find a single flaw in the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's just beautiful.
Yeah, I agree completely. All right, well, Dave, thank you so much for being on the show. Where can we find more about LCD Dreams?
You can go to lcddreams.com. That is our company site. You can also go to evilmasteroverlord.com or emothegame.com. Both of those are website for Evil Master Overlord. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/evilmasteroverlord, facebook.com/lcddreams. And then on Twitter, we're at lcddreams. That covers most of them.
Perfect. If you want to find out more about me, you can go to tobiamarks.com. It's where I have my blog and a bunch of resources for indie game developers out there. You can also follow me on Twitter at tobiamarks. If you want to find out more about the show, it's beindienow.com. You can get show notes, past shows, all those links you just messaged, so you don't have to, you know, type them in by hand. If you want to know more about the show, ask a question to the show, or even be on the show, you can email show@beindienow.com. Thank you again, Dave, for being on.
Thanks for having me.
Go out there and make some games.